Now, this is where it gets a little detailed. Because Ezekiel, in his vision, was given the opportunity to take a rod about 6.5 feet long and to measure everything he saw in his vision about this temple that's going to come and be rebuilt during the 1,000 years. The rest of the book of Ezekiel, if you remember, is all about the destruction of the northern kingdom. But Ezekiel is very distraught when he's thinking about it, and the Lord gives him hope by allowing him to see the temple in the new kingdom and to describe it and to measure it. Well, Jeremiah was without hope in chapter 29 of Jeremiah, and the Lord stopped and gave him a blessing by telling him about the new covenant that was going to come. Daniel is distraught when he sees and he reads and he knows what's going to happen, and the Lord allows him to read in the book of Jeremiah those things about that has come to him about the hope that is going to be for Israel. John in the book of Revelation is a little distraught as a couple of places, and he falls before the person, the angel that is telling him these stories. The angel tells him, "Don't worship me. Get up from here and let me show you the rest of what's going on." You know, human agents of the Lord become distraught also at times. Well, here, Ezekiel is told specific information or given the details, and he measures it with his rod, and he gives us those measurements. You will see there's the picture. That is the size of the Temple Mount. That is 50 miles by 50 miles. On the east side of that mount, there is a section that is 20 miles by 50 miles. That section is reserved for the physical temple. And you see that physical temple is going to sit on a 1 square mile section of that 20 by 50 right in the middle. You see the arrow that goes down? That little picture up there is kind of looks like a board game, but that is where those buildings will sit on that 1 square mile area. Now, the whole section, the 20 by 50 section there, where that temple is going to be reserved for all the priests to live and also for all the sons of Zadok to live when they're ministering in the temple, 20 miles by 20 miles. Now, the Zadoks are a group of priests that are descendants of Levi, just like the rest of the priests. But these Zadoks were specifically chosen that their lineage would do something special during the time of the millennial kingdom for all of that. All that time, and they have specific duties to minister the Lord, just as the other priests have duties to minister the Lord also. Now, these priests, they have families. Those families are living there too. In that middle section, in the middle, there is another 20 mile by 50 mile section that will be used for the living area of all the tribes of Levi. That's the families of the Zadoks. That's the families of the rest of the priests. When the priests in the Zadok's time come for them to go and to minister in the temple, they will go to living quarters that are there in that first section. Their families will not go with them because they're on duty. That's where they will live, and they will go to the temple. Their families are back in that middle section, and as they go off duty, those priests and those Zadoks will return back to their section there in the middle to live with their families. Then, off to the west side of the mount, there's a 10 by 20 mile section. There's two 10 by 20 mile sections, one on the top and one on the bottom, that is there for growing food for these Levites. That's for growing food. That's their gardens. That's where they'll have their the fresh vegetables and fresh fruits that will grow all year round, every single month. Then in the middle of that, You'll see a 10-mile by 10-mile square. The area is for King David. That is for King David and his descendants to live. You say, well, I thought King David was dead. Well, he is dead, but he has resurrected, and he has his robe of white. He did that when the resurrected saints of the Old Testament were taken up. And King David will come back not to be king, but to be the prince of the king. Oh, we're going to enjoy that next week. All right. Now, there's that temple, 1 square mile. Coming out of that temple and running backwards, there's a river. And we've already talked about this river, but I want to discuss it a little more. The river will run down, one of the legs of it will run down to that Dead Sea. That river will start as it comes out from behind the temple altar, the altar of the Lord, the seat of the Lord, the great white throne, I should say. It'll run past the altar and go out. That river will start as a trickle, just a trickle. But 1,750 feet later, it will be ankle deep. 1,750 feet later, it will be knee deep. And 1,750 feet later, it will be so deep that you will not be able to touch the bottom and you will have to swim to be in it. It will run all the way down to the sea down south. It will be a gorgeous river. It will have trees and palms and everything on either side of it. It will have fish like you have never fished before. So if we've got any fishermen, no, y'all aren't going to be there fishing. Sorry. But all those who want to fish during that time, who've made it into the kingdom from the time of the tribulation, they will stand there and they will fish and they will have a great time. The interesting thing is in the movement of the topography, remember the Dead Sea has all this salt because there's these salt marshes and everything that were destroyed around the area that caused that salt to be in the Dead Sea. And there's still marshes and there's still pits that have salt in them. Those salt pits in the movement of the kingdom are still going to remain under the Lord's control. He's going to allow them to stay because the priests are going to need salt to throw on to the sacrifices when they come. And where do they get the salt? They get the salt from down from where the salt was during the time of the Dead Sea's existence. By the way, those trees that are around that beautiful river that have wonderful fish in it will produce great fruit and vegetables and that type of stuff, fruit basically from the trees, that will be able to be eaten every single month of the year. And the leaves of those trees will have medicinal healing purposes, and so they'll be used for healing also. Now the design of the temple. Let's go right to that square, okay? That square of 1 square mile and where this temple proper is going to sit and where the temple of the Lord will be. There'll be all that room around it where the Levites are living, the priests are living, the Zadoks are living, all the Levites' families are living. The food will be grown. David's descendants will be there too. There's that area. But let's go inside that 1 square mile area. Ezekiel measured all that and he gave some specific dimensions. First of all, that entire complex is going to have a wall around it that is 10.5 feet high, not very high, and 10.5 feet thick. There are three gates that go into that city. Now, I want you to understand, there's this larger part of this, of that larger 50 mile by 50 mile and all that kind of stuff, that has four gates that come into the city, one on the east, one on the west, one on the north, one on the south. But when you come to this part of the complex right here, coming into this temple area, there's only three gates, one on the north, one on the south, and one on the west. There is no gate or entryway into this complex on the west. These three gates will have, and I have this up on the board, these three gates, because I could not put it in the picture, have seven steps that lead up to each of these gates. You see that? Okay, now, just inside that gate, there are six guard rooms. Three guard rooms on each side. Now you might say, what in the world do we have guard rooms for? Why do they need guards? We still got humans who are coming to see the Lord. We still have possibilities of enemies of the Lord, because people are people, and the people will be in human bodies coming to visit him. But more than that, this is all about royalty. This is all about regalness. This is all about the presence of the Lord on his throne and those who are around him. These are not so much guards as they are men who will stand there in those rooms and who will present themselves to let everyone know that as you're passing through there, this is a special, special place. Well, those guard rooms are not shown in that drawing. And also, the top of that gate and through that guard room, there's a porch. And the porch is an area, goes up and goes around. It goes all the way around the three sides. It has columns that are there. It'll be beautiful when we get inside of it. Those columns will be there. Looking out of the rooms that are on either side, not talking about those guard rooms, but there are rooms on either side on this porch too that have windows and they have doors and they have shutters. I mean, they are big time. Plantation shutters, I guess. For those of us who have plantation shutters, there'll be shutters on these doors to open and to close. The walls and the windows will be covered with carvings of palm trees from the top to the bottom, just like they were in Solomon's temple, just like they were in Ezekiel's temple. The outer court that surrounds the temple proper will be 175 feet wide, all the way around on three sides. The porches that have the columns will be around this outer court, and those columns will be carved with palm trees. The columns are not in that drawing. I've got them up on the board for you. Now, once you go into and you hit the seven steps that goes in, there's actually eight steps that take you up to the porch, according to Ezekiel's measurements. At the top of the porch, not shown in these pictures, there is a doorway where there is a area where the burnt offerings will be rinsed. And on each porch, there will be eight tables. On each side, there's eight tables there that will be used to slaughter the burnt, sin, and guilt offerings before they're taken over to the temple proper. Double hooks will be there where the meat from the slaughter will be hung until it is ready to be offered there on the altar. Now, before I go any further, people say, why are there sacrifices and offerings continuing when the Lord is there? You have to remember, there is a whole tribe called the Levites who have to eat. Nothing is different going into this than the system that was set up during the time of the Mosaic Law, where when you brought your offerings to the Lord, the offerings were offered before the Lord, but the meat and all the hide and everything, except in certain occasions, was used for the families of the Levites. The Levites get no land in this deal. The Levites have no homes in this deal except what is owned there on the Temple Mount. The Levites have no food except for what is collected in tithes and offerings to the Lord. The same thing happens with your ministers in this church. We are paid through your tithes and offerings. Your sacrifices to the Lord pays for the ministry of this church. Now, I'm not so sure that the Lord's concerned about a way to keep the lights on in this temple, but your offering today keeps the lights on. Somebody has to pay the bills for the gas bill, the water bill, the light bill, the material. Your Sunday school lesson that you're holding in your hand cost $1.06 to create. Somebody pays that bill every single time they bring an offering. You pay my salary. You pay my retirement. You pay my health insurance. You pay for me to be your minister. I could not survive or drive a car or buy gas if it wasn't for your tithes and offerings. And the way the Lord has designed that is you bring your tithes and offerings to the storehouse, and I am paid as a minister of this church out of that. And in turn, I, like they had to do in the Old Testament, must take a tithe also of what I have received and give it back to the Lord, only to see it make the cycle again. The offerings and the sacrifices, you have to remember, during the 1,000 years, and this is in next week's lesson, nothing changes in the world because humans are still there that have to have jobs. They have to have food. The food chain is still going on. Everything is just as it is because babies are going to be born. And guess what? If a person lives to be 100, of which everybody during that time is going to live to be probably over 100, more than 1,000. But those who are just 100 years of age are just as if they're teenagers because they've got a lot of life left for them when we go into the 1,000-year time. Ooh, some of you think, all right, I'm not sure I would want to live more than 100 years. But it'll be different then, I promise you. Now, there are two chambers there as you go into this wonderful place. They're called the temple proper, and there's two chambers, one on the north and one on the south, where the singers are going to be, and there will be music 24 hours a day from the singers and the priests who are there. The south gate will be for the priest to enter, those who keep charge of the temple. That's the gate they will enter. They will not enter through the north gate. They will enter through the south gate. The sons of Zadok, who will be in charge of the altar, will use a north chamber, a big chamber that you see there. That will be their chamber that they will do specific things in. Down in the, there's a stairway that leads up to that temple. Now we're just dealing with the temple proper. We've taken all the rest of the stuff out from the picture, and we're just dealing with that temple proper. There's a stairway that leads into the temple. We do not know how many steps that has. I have not remembered whether it was or not, and I did not write it down. And from the inner court, a porch will enter into the temple that is surrounded by columns. Beautiful columns will be there. The first room inside of the temple area is going to be called the nave. We call that a foyer. Catholic churches will call it the nave. That is a place that's going to lead into the holy place. Now, don't get these mixed up. There's the nave, the holy place, and the most holy place. Three different things. The next room is the most holy place behind the holy place, and the temple will be 3 stories high at this point. The walls around the temple will have chambers in them. Those chambers, there'll be 30 rooms on each of the 3 levels of the temple there. The temple, that area, the length of that temple is 175 feet. And all the walls will be carved with cherubs and with palm trees. And a palm tree will be between each cherub. And each cherub will have 2 faces. A man's face towards one of the palm trees, and a young lion's face towards the opposite palm tree. Now the picture there that I put there is actually a picture of the man's face and the lion's face. It did not print very well, so I have used my artistic ability to draw a picture of that. It's one cherub with 2 faces. One is a lion facing a palm tree, and one is a man facing the palm tree. The man's face does not face the lion's face. They're facing opposite directions, and palm trees on either side. There's an altar that is there in front of the Lord. It's made of wood, and it will sit in front of the Lord in the most holy of holy places. Now, in that outer court to the north and to the south are those 2 chambers. Each of these chambers, as I have said to you, are 3 stories high. Both chambers will provide places for the priest to dine on the grain and the sin and the guilt offering. By the way, they're only dining on 10% of the offerings, because the other 90% of the offerings are going to the families, their families, who are back home, just as it happened and occurred in the Old Testament days when they were under the law. Now, the place of the Lord's throne, the great white throne, in that most holy place, the Lord will sit on His great white throne, where He will dwell among the sons of Israel forever. The entire mount will be holy, and the law of His house will rule the world. It will be the only law in the world. Then there's the altar. You see, the altar is there in front of the temple proper. The altar is where the burnt offerings will be done, and it will sit on a 7-foot-high base, and it will be in front of the temple, and it will extend another 7-foot-high above it to the top of the horns of those altars. You see those horns on the corners? It will be 24.5-foot square. Now, the priest chambers. We've talked about those twice, but I want to tell you something else about them. The Levites from the line of Zadok, who will minister there in the temple, they will wear linen garments. They will have a linen turban on. They will wear linen or underwear. In fact, they do not wear any kind of material that will allow them to sweat. But they do not wear this linen clothing when they leave the temple. When they're headed back home, they put on the clothing of the day to go back home. They will not marry any widows or divorced women if their spouses have died, but they are allowed to marry the widowed women of other priests. In other words, they will not go outside of the priestly line for a wife if their wives have died by any chance. And if they are a new priest coming along, because there'll be many that will be born at that point in time, they will take a wife of the same tribe as they are, or they will take a wife of a widowed priest, depending on their age and all of that. They will not shave their heads. They will not allow the locks of their hair to grow too long either. In other words, they will not wear a buzz cut, but they're not going to wear their hair very long down on their shoulders and that type of things either. They will not drink wine anytime while they are serving as a priest there in the temple or in the temple court. Their job will be to teach the people according to the ordinances of the Lord. Now, if you want to read all about this, go read the Ezekiel passages, because all I'm giving you is a summary and a harmony of what's there in all those Ezekiel passages at the end that tell us all the detail about what is going to happen. These priests will lead the people to worship on the appropriate feast days and the appropriate Sabbath days, which will be a return back to that. They will never touch a dead person unless they touch a person who is a family member who has died. Now, I will tell you about deaths during that point in time in next week's lesson, but if they touch a family member during that time, they have to go through a cleansing process for 7 days, and they have to present certain offerings during that period of time. They will not have an inheritance in the land. They will not own the land. The Danites will own the land. The Reubenites will own the land. The Simeons will own land. The Judah's tribe will own land. The Benjamites will own land. Issachar's tribe will own land. Asher's tribe will own land. But the Levites will not own land. Their portion of their land will be that holy portion that will cross all the way from the Mediterranean Sea all the way over to the Euphrates River in a strip there, where they will be allowed to live and to work along with the descendants of David, but they will not own any of it at all. It will not be theirs. It will belong to the Lord, and the Lord is their inheritance. When those priests are there in the temple, their meals will be prepared in the kitchens behind the priest chambers. You see, there's one on the north, and that arrow points to the one on the south. Those will be on 3 layers. Remember, those chambers are 3 stories high. There are 3 kitchens on each side. on each the north and the south to provide the food for the chambers on each layer. There are 30 rooms there. There are 30 rooms there that are there. There are three stories high where these priests will eat in those chambers. Also, the arrow is not pointing in the correct place, but if you'll notice in the four corners, that arrow got moved. In the four corners, there's a kitchen. Now, that kitchen is very important because that's not where the priest's kitchen is, because when they are boiling the guilt offerings and the sin offerings, they do not do it in that temple proper area. They do it down in the four corners of the complex. Well, remember that 10 by 10 piece of land that is there? Let's go back to that. That section of land will be carved out for the Lord's prince to live. He will be the resurrected David, the father of Solomon. In fact, Ezekiel chapter 37, verse 25 says this, "And they shall live on the land that I gave to Jacob, my servant, in which your fathers lived, and they will live on it, they and their sons' sons forever. And David, my servant, shall be their prince forever." That was King David. He will be back in his resurrected body. Now, the division of the land. I want you to look at the map. You'll notice at the top, it starts with Dan and Asher, Naphtali, Manasseh, Ephraim, Reuben, Judah. Then there's that holy portion that I've told you about. Then there's Benjamin, Simeon, Issachar, Zebulun, and Gad. You notice that at the very top of Dan, that little area, Dan is the least among the tribes. If you remember, that is in Jacob's prophecy in the last of the part of Genesis. He does not get as much land as the rest of the tribes do. At the bottom five tribes there you see, at least the bottom four, they go all the way to the Nile River. But as they're cutting across, and it's out of this picture, they're actually going over in that strip to the Euphrates River that's across. All the way across, these strips go across. And these lands, these areas are divided up from the Nile to the Euphrates, across that great oasis that will be created. It is desert now. It is dry. It is desolate. But then it is going to be a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful oasis. Now, the holy portion of the land there will be designated for the priest and for David's people to use, that is across the middle of that strip of land. Well, we are almost to the end of the 45 days. We're 7 days out. The altar is ready. The temple is ready. Everything is ready, basically, except for the altar must be now cleansed before it can be used on the very first day of the Lord's inauguration as King of Kings when he enters into the temple. So with all the building preparations complete, we're going to cleanse this altar that is out there in front of the temple proper and where all these offerings will take place. On day 38, according to the timeline, a young bull will be provided for a sin offering. It will be slaughtered, and the blood will be rubbed on the four horns of that altar. Then on that same day, a young male goat will be offered also, and its blood will be altered, will be rubbed upon those four horns. And then a young bull and a young ram that are without blemish will be sacrificed, and the priest will throw salt on them. Where did they get the salt? Out of the salt marshes that have not been done away with. Then each day, now these are offerings and sacrifices. This is the food for the priest on these days, okay? The first part is the part of rubbing the blood to cleanse the altar, but they've got to do something with the meat and everything, and so it becomes food for the priest. Then on each day after that, day 39 through 45, a goat, a young bull, and a ram will be sacrificed as sin offerings on the altar for those next days. Finally, the altar is ready. The 1335th day is going to arrive the next day. It'll be the first day of the 1,000-year kingdom of the Lord, and he will enter through his gates and go sit upon his great white throne. But before he does that, something else happens during the 45 days towards the end. The call to gather the Jews will go out throughout the entire world. I love the way the Lord said it in Matthew chapter 24. Telling about this time, he says, "And he will send forth his angel with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other." Now, folks, sky means sky, and the four winds means winds. He's talking about from the world, all the way around, wherever they are, they will be gathered. The word elect in the Scripture in the New Testament only applies every place in the New Testament. It only applies to Jews. It never, ever, ever, ever applies to Gentiles. The context is always, when the word elect is used, it is always in application to Jews and Jews alone. But I cannot leave that, because Zechariah says the same thing in the Old Testament, but in a different way, in a way I really love it. Zechariah says, the Lord says, "I will whistle for them to gather them together, for I have redeemed them, and they will be as numerous as they were before." To think, my Lord knows how to whistle. Isn't that going to be good to call them to come back? Well, Jesus will move all the Jews from all over the world back into Israel. The Danites will take part in their land. Simeon's group will get their land. They'll go in there. They've got places they're going to build. And something's going to happen as these Jews are beginning to travel back to the promised land to live on the entire promised land. Never, ever in all of history have the Jews occupied the entire promised land that was given to them according to the Lord. The maximum amount of land that they have ever occupied was a little less than 10% during the days of Solomon, but they get it all, 100% of it, and they'll be back on that land. And guess what? Some Gentiles are going to want to try to get in on it, but that's next week's lesson. We'll be there. So as the tribes of Israel arrive to take their place in their new homes, the Lord will make his inaugural entrance up to the steps, through the east gate, up onto the holy mount, across the outer court, up the steps and through the east gate of the holy temple, past the altar, up the steps through the holy place, through the nave, through the holy place, and he will go into the most holy of holy places, and he will sit down on his great white throne in that most holy of holies, and he will do that on the first day of his 1,000-year kingdom here on earth, and we will talk about that the next time we're together, which will be next week. Yes.